92-94% people living in India today are not the original inhabitants of India. Their ancestors came from abroad. How is the South Indian language being spoken in Balochistan and Pakistan? Nobody left India. People pouring into India for 10,000 years or so. People left India only on two occasions. The answer is that people migrate from uncomfortable areas to comfortable areas. At one time, it was believed that the Dravidians were the original inhabitants of India. But that theory has also been disproved. So many religions, so many castes, so many languages, so many races. Somebody tall, somebody short, somebody fair, somebody dark, somebody brown. Different food habits, different languages, culture. If you compare India with China, there's broad homogeneity in China. 95% of Chinese belong to are what are known as Han, H-A-N. 95%, same ethnic group. Now this diversity can be both a source of weakness and of strength. The great Mughal emperor Akbar, as the real father of the Indian nation, he was 200 years ahead of his time. He had the vision that this is a country of great diversity. He created an inclusive empire. In Akbar's court, there were Hindus who were in very high positions, like Todarman. He was like the finance minister of India today. He controlled all the finances of the Mughal Empire. And Birbal and Man Singh were great generals. Mughal Empire was broadly secular, inclusive, and that is why it lasted so long. I want to speak on what is India. Because you are all Indians, there are 1.4 billion Indians. But perhaps nobody can tell you what is India. You're all Indians, but you don't know what is India. So I will tell you. See, this is broadly a country of immigrants. 92-94% people living in India today are not the original inhabitants of India. Their ancestors came from abroad, mostly from the Northwest. So we are a country of immigrants like North America. North America is also a country of immigrants where initially there were some tribal people known then as Red Indians and now called Native Americans, but they were very few. Huge number of Europeans came from, say, 16th century or 17th century into North America. Then people came from Asia and Africa and Latin America and so on. But broadly, North America is a country of immigrants, but it's a country of new immigrants who came over the last 400 years or so. Whereas India is a country of immigrants who have been coming into India for thousands of years. As I said, 92-94% of us are descendants of people who came from abroad, mainly from the Northwest. Who are the original inhabitants of India? At one time, it was believed that the Dravidians were the original inhabitants of India. But that theory has also been disproved. And now the currently accepted theory is that both Aryans and Dravidians came from outside India, from the Northwest. And the original inhabitants of India were the pre-Dravidian tribals, known as Adivasis or scheduled tribes, like Bhils, Gond, Santhals, Todas, who exist even today in India, but they hardly 6-7% of the population of India. The fact that even Dravidians came from outside is established by several facts, like there is a language called Brahui, B-R-H-U-I, which is a Dravidian language, but which is spoken by 2 million people in Balochistan in Pakistan even today. I met some Brahui speaking people. They speak a language like Tamil. Now you will be surprised, how is a South Indian language, Dravidian language, being spoken in Pakistan? B-R-A-H-U-I, Brahui. it is a Dravidian language. When Dravidian languages are maybe 1,000 miles away in Tamil Nadu and Karnataka and Andhra Pradesh and Kerala, how is the South Indian language being spoken in Balochistan, in Pakistan? Even today it is spoken. You can see on Google and YouTube. And obvious reason is that Dravidians used to live in this area, Pakistan, Afghanistan area. But then the Aryans pushed them southwards, but some remnants remained behind, who are the present Brahui speakers. Another proof that the Dravidians were not the original inhabitants, rather the pre-Dravidian tribals like Bhil, Gond, Santal and all were the original inhabitants of India, is the fact that these tribals, even today, speak a group of languages called the Austric group of languages, A-U-S-T-R-I-C. These tribals in India, who are just 6-7%, they don't speak the Dravidian group of languages like Tamil or Malayalam or Telugu or Kannada. Those languages belong to a group of languages called the Dravidian group of languages. Whereas these people living in the tribal areas, even today, Bhil, Gond, Santal, you know, they speak a group of languages which is totally different from the Dravidian group of languages. And it is called the Austric group of languages. So there are several facts which now indicate that the original inhabitants of India were not Dravidians. They were the pre-Dravidian tribals. And both Aryans and Dravidians came from outside India. And for thousands of years, people have been coming into India. Nobody left India. People pouring into India for 10,000 years or so. People left India only on two occasions. One is from the middle of the 19th century onwards, the plantation labor which was sent by the British rulers, the poor peasants in Bihar and UP and all, they were sent to Fiji and Mauritius and British Guyana and West Indies and so on to work as plantation labor in the sugar tobacco plantations. Because now their descendants are doing very well there. I met some of them. Second migration from India was the recent diaspora of highly educated people, IIT graduates, doctors and all, over the last say, 50 years who have gone to America and done very well. They are richer than the average American. But other than this, these two waves of migration, nobody left India. People kept coming into India, mainly from Northwest. Why? Why were people coming into India? See, the answer is that people migrate from uncomfortable areas to comfortable areas. Everybody wants comfort. Now, this area in southern Russia, Iran, Afghanistan, were cold areas, rocky areas. Why should anybody migrate from India to, say, Afghanistan, which is covered with snow for 4 or 5 months in a year? Rocky, mountainous, uncomfortable. Everybody wants comfort. So, people kept migrating to India because, see, this was a place ideal for agriculture, paradise for agricultural society. Because what do you need for agriculture? You require level land, you require fertile soil, you require plenty of water for irrigation. All this was in abundance in the Indian subcontinent. You go from Rawalpindi to Bangladesh and deep south to Kanyakumari. Almost all of it is level land, fertile soil, plenty of water for irrigation, lakes, rivers. This was paradise. And it was not too cold. I mean, I had never seen snow falling in my life until I went to Canada to meet my son. First time I saw a snowfall. Never snows. So, it was a very comfortable place, ideal for agriculture. You see a geography map, you will find most of India green, except the Himalayas, which are north of India, that you find in white or brown, but otherwise all green. So people migrate from uncomfortable areas to comfortable areas. And that is why people coming from northwest, from the cold and harsh mountainous areas towards India, where, as I said, there was great comfort, ideal for agriculture. So that is why broadly India is a country of immigrants, mostly from northwest and to a much lesser extent from northeast, because you know people in northeast, like in Nagaland, you know, they have mongoloid features, which means they came from the China side, whereas people who came from northwest were more Caucasian, because they came from those areas. Because this is a country of immigrants, as I said, between 92% to 94%. That is why there's such tremendous diversity in India. So many religions, so many castes, so many languages, so many races. Somebody tall, somebody short, somebody fair, somebody dark, somebody brown. Different food habits, different languages, cultures. Tremendous diversity in India. If you compare India with China, we both have about the same population. I think both of us have about 1.4 billion population. But there's broad homogeneity in China. Not absolute homogeneity. The northwest urban area has Muslims and all Turkish. But 95% of China, of Chinese, belong to what are known as Hans, H-A-N. 95%, same ethnic group. And they have a common written language all over China called Mandarin. Mandarin is also a spoken language in large parts of China. But in southern China, there's Cantonese, and there are many dialects like Hakka and so on. But written language is the same, and the script is the same everywhere. In India, even the scripts are different, written languages are different. So, there's broad. See, all Chinese have Mongoloid features, whereas in India, some have Caucasian features, some have Mongoloid features, some have Negroid features. So, as I said, there's much more. This is a country of diversity. China, with the same population, is broadly a country with homogeneity. Much, there's very little diversity. So, this explains the so many castes and languages, religions, and so on. Now, this diversity can be both a source of weakness and of strength. It can be a weakness of, it can be a source of weakness if our political leaders and other leaders can polarize society, make us hate each other, make us incite violence against each other. We are divided. That is be a source of weakness if we fight each other on the basis of religion, caste, and so on. But diversity can also be a source of great strength. And I will give you one illustration. You see, as I told you, in USA also is a country of immigrants. In USA, people came from various European countries, Germany, England, France, Switzerland, Italy, Sweden. And also people coming from Asia, Africa, Latin America. Now, people coming from various parts of the world, they brought their own technical skills, their own culture, and so on. So when all of these were pooled together, that led to very rapid progress, because you have got a huge pool of technical skills and culture and all of them resulted in great advance by the people of North America. So, as I said, if diversity is used properly, it can be a source of great strength. But unfortunately, today in India, it is a source of great weakness because our political leaders want their vote banks on religious and caste vote banks, and they incite hatred, they polarize society, you know. So, therefore, we have to create a system where nobody is allowed to polarize society or spread hatred. See, secularism is absolutely essential in India. Because, as I said, there are so many religions. And I regard the great Mughal Emperor Akbar as the real father of the Indian nation. Because he had the vision. He was 200 years ahead of his time. He had the vision that this is a country of great diversity. And therefore, we have to take everybody together. He created an inclusive empire. And that is why the Mughal Empire lasted so long. Because it was inclusive. In Akbar's court, there were Hindus who were in very high positions, like Todarmal. He was like the finance minister of India today. He controlled all the finances of the Mughal Empire. And Birbal and Man Singh were great generals. So, the Mughal Empire was broadly secular, inclusive, and that is why it lasted so long. Except there's a controversy about about Aurangzeb. I'm not going into that. But otherwise, the Mughals were secular, and the result was that India got about 25% of the world's wealth and 25% of the world's foreign trade was with India. We were a very rich country. Sone ki chidiya kehte the. Richest country in the world. Because the Mughals created an inclusive empire. Everybody was given respect. Later on, when the British came, they started a policy of divide and rule, making Hindus and Muslims fight each other and so on. And the result was that by 1947, when we got independence, we were left with hardly 2 or 3% of the world's trade and 2 or 3% of the world's wealth. So from a very rich country, we became a very poor country. Because we were divided by the British. And their forces which still keep us divided. But it is absolutely essential in India particularly, which is a country of such great diversity, that we must give equal respect to all religions, all castes, all languages. Everybody is equal. Then there will be no problem. But this again requires a different political system, because it can't be done under the system of parliamentary democracy where our politicians divide people on the basis of caste and religion to get their votes. It requires a different political and social order. So, as I said, this country has tremendous potential. We have first-class mind. You know, we were at one time most advanced in science and technology. The Arabs used to say that. You read my article, India was leading the world in science. You can see on Google. The Arabs, who are Muslims, they said the most superior people in the world in science are the Hindus. We discovered the decimal system in mathematics. No, you must understand, today everybody knows 1, 2, 3, 4. But now let me tell you what was done by the ancient Indians, the Hindus. Ancient Romans were a very great civilization. The civilization of Caesar and Augustus. But if you have asked an ancient Roman to write any number, he would write it in alphabets. See, in the Romans used to write their numbers in alphabets. Like 1 is I, 5 is V, 10 is X, L is 50, C is 100, D is 500, M is 1000. The Romans did not have any letter to express a number above 1000. So if an ancient Roman had to write 2000, he would have to write MM. He had to write M twice, MM. That would mean 2000. 3000, he would have to write MMM. And if he wanted to write 1 million, he would have to write M 1000 times. He would go almost mad. There was no concept of zero among the Romans. See, this concept of zero was the most revolutionary scientific discovery. I'll tell you why. See, these numbers don't really exist. 1, 2, 3, 4 does not exist. What exists is one man, two chairs, three tables, four trees, five cars. These exist. 1, 2, 3, 4 are pure abstractions. They don't have any existence in the objective universe. And to conceive of zero, zero tables, zero man, zero cars, the Europeans could never achieve it. They could never think it out. But without zero, you cannot express huge numbers. Now, for example, in India, if we have to write 1000, it is called Sahasra. Sahasra means 1000, 1 with 3 zero. I put two more zeros, it becomes lakh, 1 lakh. Put another two zeros, it becomes 1 crore. Put another two zeros, it becomes 1 Arab. Another two zeros, it becomes 1 kharab. Another two zeros, it becomes 1 pun. Put another two zeros, it becomes 1 neel. Put another two zeros, it becomes 1 shank. Put another two zeros, it becomes 1 mahashank. See, you can express astronomical numbers in very brief just by putting zeros. Europeans had no concept of zero. So this decimal system was the most revolutionary scientific discovery which was done by Indians. So I can mention many such things. Like plastic surgery was invented by Suchiro 2000 years ago. Europeans learned it only about 150 years or 200 years ago. So many, I need not go into that. But later on, of course, we were left behind. What I mean to say is that we have no defect in our intelligence, nothing lacking in our intelligence. Indians are very bright people. But they must get proper leadership, modern-minded leadership. This is the biggest problem in India. Our leaders are mostly backward-minded, themselves with feudal mindsets. Caste is communal. So the country can't progress. So, India is a great country. Our national objective must be to transform India from the present backward condition in which it is into a modern industrial giant like China has become. Because unless we do that, we will never be able to abolish poverty or unemployment or malnourishment or lack of health care or lack of good education and so on. We must develop a highly industrialized country because modern industry can generate the wealth which is required for the welfare of our people. So our national aim must be to transform India from the present semi-feudal country which it is today into a highly industrialized country. On that, there should be no opposition should be tolerated. This transformation is absolutely essential, and all patriotic people, modern-minded people, should contribute to it and think out ways and means how this historical transformation can take place. As I said, my own view is that this can only be done by some kind of a revolution. like the French Revolution. We have to have our own model of revolution, but there has to be a massive historical united struggle, uniting all people of all castes and religions and races to transform India to a modern industrial giant. Thank you.